You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hey guys, it's Nat here, and I just wanted to let you know about an upcoming event that we will be doing. It will be at St. Mary's College of California, my alma mater, and we will be working with the St. Mary's Museum of Art in order to host a Q&A and live podcast as part of their Feminizing Permanence programming. It's going to be an amazing exhibition they're putting on, and we will be hosting a live show on March 19th to promote feminizing permanence and just trying to bring attention to female artists. And yeah, we're looking forward to it a lot. I can't wait to go back to Moraga and see my old campus. And yeah, you guys should make it if you're in the Bay Area. We'll get more details about the timing and everything as it gets closer. But the date again is Thursday, March 19th. It'll be in the evening at St. Mary's College of California at the Museum of Art. So stay tuned for more information on that. And we hope to see you guys there. Enjoy the episode.
Art History Bay Briefs.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Natalie, and we are the Art History Babes. BB time.
BB time. BB time. BB time. Oh, maybe we should do a quick explanation. Every once in a while, we got to explain to you guys the differences between our episodes because we have a lot of different kinds of episodes.
Yeah, that's fair. That's so considerate of you.
You know, I do my best. This is a baby episode. Our baby episodes are shorter. They're a bit more scripted and a little less conversational. They are clean, so you can use them in school or, you know, around little ones or whatever. You get to decide however you care to use these, but we try and make them a little bit more accessible to impressionable audiences. But yeah, so that's what this is. This is a baby episode. And then we also have our regular full-length episodes, which are not clean and are a lot more conversational and kind of wild sometimes. And then we also have our hot takes episodes, which are on subjects that are very tangentially related to art history. It's more like contemporary visual culture stuff like TV shows and things. And then we kind of examine it through an art historical lens and just like share our opinions. And those are really fun. I love a hot takes episode. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those are our episodes. In case you were confused.
Be confused no more.
There it is. What are we talking about today, Natalie?
We are talking about, well, you know what? Let me just set the scene for you.
Set it. Set that scene.
All right. Imagine you, along with 19 other individuals, gather in a darkened room. You all put on your 3D glasses. So when the projector begins, you feel immersed in this golden landscape before you. A female figure dressed in a stunning peach kimono is born out of one of seven floating balls of light, and feathers flutter outward from her fingertips. As she hovers, she chants and hums as if she's meditating, while a glowing light forms in her midsection, then kind of floats off into midair before returning back to her and going back into her body. Meanwhile, other balls of light become little pastel-hued aliens, and they play instruments and make cute little squeaking sounds and hover around their beloved goddess. The seven figures levitate above a serene scene of still water and flat land, while a hazy sunrise shines from behind, illuminating the sky and reflecting in the calm water below. Below our female figure, a bright orange and pink lotus flower floats on the water. All of our figures dissolve into the cosmos finally, and stars seem to shoot out of the screen and over the audience. In actuality, fans are gently blowing sandalwood-scented cool air at the viewers for a final olfactory experience. So, Corey, you and our listeners just experienced Nirvana.
Sounds like everything I want in life, man. You just laid it out.
7 minutes of Nirvana.
That's literally all I want. It's all I'm searching for, really. All of this. This is what I'm searching for.
Well, you found it.
I have been looking for Nirvana, which is a multi-sensory experience created by Japanese-born artist Mariko Mori in 1997. It's a 3D video installation titled Nirvana, a reference to the state of mind where one escapes the suffering of this world. So not a reference to the early 90s grunge band fronted by Kurt Cobain, but it's okay.
As far as we know, no. I mean, but we'll look into it.
Those two things might be one and the same. We don't know.
Hey, I could see it, Kurt.
Right.
I believe in you, man.
I was going to make a dark joke there, but
I mean, they're just begging to be made.
I know. We're going to keep moving. All right. So it's a 3D video installation titled Nirvana, a reference to the state of mind where one escapes the suffering of this world and realizes their own oneness in the universe. Mori's art often explores Buddhist themes and employs Buddhist symbolism. For example, the floating female figure in Nirvana is actually Mori herself, but dressed and posed as Kiki Joan, a Japanese female deity of wealth and good fortune who is adapted via Buddhism from the Hindu goddess Lakshmi. She is also considered to be the goddess of happiness, fertility, and beauty. Reaching transcendence isn't generally associated with technology, but this meditative work wouldn't be possible without the help of CGI, which is computer-generated imagery. Using a computer, Mori was able to create this entire scene digitally using a mix of real-life footage and computer-generated images. Herself and the Dead Sea landscape are modified from reality, but come together to create a surreal fantasy land immersing the viewer.
Mori came into prominence in the mid-90s, and though her Japanese heritage certainly plays a role in her art, she wants her art to transcend nationality and to speak to people on a universal level. As an Asian-born artist who studied in London, Mori doesn't want to be confined to the Western or Eastern canon of art, so she's really looking to create something that speaks to people on a human and a universal level.
Isn't that what we all want? Don't we all just want to speak to humans?
I think so. I think especially when we're talking art, like, it's all right? About being human and just trying to figure out what the f- that's about or what that means. I don't know. It's so hard for me today.
Beep.
I think your thing at the beginning was a reminder to me. It was just like a subtle, like, nudge, like, hey, remember?
Stop swearing.
Remember what these are about? So once Mori moved from London to New York City, she said that she felt more inclined to explore her Japanese identity as well as her global identity. And I think that was just because New York City is a place where most people living there are not from there. So bringing national identity or just another regional identity along with you is more common, or I don't know. That's how she was explaining it. I think I'm kind of butchering, but she explores themes from both cultures within her work, and more often she really tries to deal with the universal themes such as spirituality, technology, nature, and oneness. In her early career, she worked as a model, and her time in the fashion world is really evident throughout her artistic career. Often compared to Cindy Sherman, Mori is no stranger to the camera, and she often posed for her own art early in her career, just as we see she did in Nirvana.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of Cindy Sherman. Like, you can see that comparison in a lot of the work where Mori herself is kind of the center. Mm-hmm. Like, I definitely see kind of a similar, because she, a lot like Cindy Sherman, she's dealing a lot with the gaze and, like, mm-hmm. how she portrays herself in a certain, you know, space and how people react mm-hmm. to her in a certain space. But yeah, you can also check out our baby episode on Cindy Sherman if you want to learn more about that. But yeah, there's definitely, I think Mori just takes it to a more, what's the word I'm looking for? A more spiritual mm-hmm. level, elevating it to these bigger ideas of, like, wholeness and oneness. But there is still this element of how people react to one another, which is super interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where Mori wanting to move away from her Japanese identity being like such a large part of her art makes sense. But even in the fact that she's dealing with like global and universal identity, she weirdly can't avoid the Japanese part because of mm-hmm. her experience. And I think especially being Japanese born and then moving to a place like London or New York, like Cindy Sherman as a white woman, I think had a lot more ability to just project other characters onto herself and be like more of a blank canvas because
totally.
The art world, especially the worlds that both Mori and Cindy Sherman were working in, is predominantly white and made for predominantly white audiences. So, you know, while Mori is really pushing the boundaries of human identity beyond just the terrestrial, yeah, I don't know where I'm going with that, but there was something in
there.
I mean, I was with
you. I was like, yeah, Natalie's got this right now.
I've never been a good finisher, so we'll just leave it with that lovely ending and take a quick break before we come back to talk about Pure Land.
Yes, let's do it. And we're back. We're back to this baby episode. We're talking about Mariko Mori. And let's talk about Pure Land. Pure Land is a photographic still from Nirvana, which was printed and placed behind thick glass. It's one of four images from the Esoteric Cosmos series, which, man, like, if you didn't already have me sold, mm-hmm. like, the just the name Esoteric Cosmos, like, I'm in. Like, I don't even care. Yeah. Like, done.
Sign
done
you and up. Done.
Yeah, sign me up. That sounds great to me. So it's one of four images from the Esoteric Cosmos series, which our friends over at Sardle aptly compared to Nickelodeon's Avatar, The Last Airbender, because each one represents an element. And yeah, speaking of things that I love, I also love Avatar, The Last Airbender. So
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I love Avatar. I love our friends at Sardle. And
yeah, I really need to rewatch The Last Airbender. It's been a minute, but
oh yeah, I haven't seen it since high school, so I don't really remember other than just like stills in my mind of cool scenes and really amazing art. But
it's
that's
just
about it.
Yeah, but it's also like it's just so solid. Like so many life lessons in that, mm-hmm. like in that show. Yeah, if you haven't watched Avatar: The Last Airbender, gotta check it out.
Corey, maybe we should start watching it and we can do a hot take on it.
Yes! I adore this idea. Yeah, 100%. Yep, we're definitely doing a Last Airbender hot take. That's happening at some point in the future. Watch out for it. All right. Ooh. In Shinto Buddhist philosophy, the Pure Land is a celestial realm of the celestial Amida Buddha. The Amida Buddha, like the goddess Kiki Joan, has been cited as a reference for Mori's female character in Nirvana Pure Land. Amida Buddha is the primary Buddha of the Pure Land, basically paradise. So she's definitely making reference to this particular deity. The Dead Sea landscape has been interpreted as a symbol for rebirth, seeing that it's a desolate environment, but here it's shown at dawn. The other reason being that in Buddhist faith, salt is a metaphor for purification. Additionally, the lotus flower floating in the Dead Sea symbolizes purity and reincarnation. And in the background on the shore, we see a rocket ship-like structure that has been likened to a futuristic Tibetan stupa.
Yeah, so Pure Land is really just a still from Nirvana, the video. Mori was talking in an interview about how she wanted to create an experience outside of Nirvana because it's a video installation that only 20 people can see at a time. It has a finite amount of time that you're there. It's 7 minutes long, and then you need to leave. So while that is a very immersive experience, it's short.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who want maybe a longer meditative experience with this scene. Pure Land is a giant printed copy where you can have that kind of experience if you're looking for it. You could sit or stand in front of the work for as long as you wanted in theory and meditate on it.
Yeah. I mean, I love that because I definitely think it's a huge thing just with where we are in contemporary art, this notion of both recording art in certain ways, but also creating different elements of an experience. I think it's really central to what a lot of artists are doing or trying to do, because we are in a time where just these like multi-sensory type experiences are becoming more of a thing, but you also want there to be an experience of the artwork outside of that, you know, ephemeral moment. And it's also interesting because you're just like adding layers to this artwork, because obviously the still is not the same thing. It is a different artwork. It's connected to the original artwork, but it's a different thing. Experiencing something as a still is different than experiencing something as a video or as an immersive experience. And I feel like with this, like if you're lucky enough to experience all of them, like you have such a layered understanding and experience of what Maury's trying to do. And that is just infinitely fascinating to me.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you said it best, like at the end there with what she's trying to do, like you can tell that by tackling it with these different mediums and experiences for the viewer, she's really focused on the motivation for the work and what she wants people to take away from it more so than the actual tangible art itself.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Like just a means to an end. So as exemplified in Nirvana and Pure Land, Maury is very interested in the relationship between reality and fantasy. And in her work, she creates fantasies of future worlds full of cyber technology, religious symbolism, and pop culture. So she's working with a lot of different iconography in order to bring together these images. Maury makes these works with the hope of offering a meditative experience for viewers. Nirvana aims to achieve this through an immersive and multisensory experience, while Pure Land allows for a longer and potentially uninterrupted meditation. Over time, Maury began using her body less within her work, and her aesthetic became increasingly extraterrestrial. And using this space imagery in her work underscores the universality by omitting human figures and the meanings that we place onto appearance. So just the fact that she is a Japanese woman adds layers and assumptions that she's trying to avoid. Maury wants us to imagine a world where we can reach enlightenment through the unity of all people.
I love it. That's so good.
I know. I feel like she's definitely speaking to your vibes.
Yeah, very much so. I want to imagine that unity people world too. Maury, I like it. All right, so what has Maury been up to since the turn of the century? Making more dope art. Her exhibition titled Rebirth was shown in London and New York from 2012 to 2013. It was made up of 35 works, including installation, audio, photographs, and drawings. All of the artworks in the show were created between 2003 and 2012, and they were first exhibited at the Royal Academy in London before being moved to the Japan Society in New York. In an interview about Rebirth, Maury addresses the fact that the two spaces are very different. She explains that prioritizing a particular sequence for the exhibition, she was able to make the installation-heavy show work in vastly different spaces.
For this exhibition, Maury continues exploring universal themes, but this time she does so by looking back to the human origin story. She visits archaeological sites in order to gain a deeper connection and understanding to our ancestors. One facet that resonated with her was how prehistoric people honored nature and how their culture was so deeply rooted in nature. And from these visits, Maury created work that deals with the cycles of nature and the relationship between human beings and nature, and ultimately our connection to nature. She believes that modern humans have forgotten, and so she wants to revitalize the connection through her art.
Amen.
Right?
All of it.
I know.
I'm so into all of it.
Lofty goals, really beautiful aesthetic. She's just trying to bring people together.
Just like wants us all to have a good transcendent time connecting with one another. I'm so about it. So about it.
Marika Mori, everyone. She is awesome.
Yeah, she's got something figured out. I would like to sit down and pick her brain for sure.
There was an article where they like jokingly reference that she's probably an alien. And I'm just like,
dude, she's, I mean, like,
probably.
if there are higher dimensional beings, like, yeah.
She's like, just trying to help us, like, out. She's just trying to nudge us in the right direction.
Just trying to clean up the mess we made. Yeah. Very into it. I'm excited to explore her work more because I didn't have a chance to do as much research as I wanted to. But I feel like I could go a lot of directions with a lot of these themes that she works with. And if we ever did a full-length episode, I would probably go on many a passionate rant about many of these ideas.
I'd be so down to do a full-length episode on her. We could go on for a while. So
I think there's a lot to unpack, but also just personally, I think there's a lot to get excited about.
Gush over.
Yeah, to just get like really amped on. And I think those are always like our best episodes anyway. So we'll add it to the list because I definitely want to spend more time with her work for sure.
Agreed. And the esoteric cosmos, man.
Give me over to the esoteric cosmos. That's
when I die, send my body up to the esoteric cosmos.
Yes, please. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's where I'm going anyways, but that's like
where you belong.
Yeah, that's what I imagine happens when you die. So like, this is just like a sneak peek.
All right. That all we got on that?
Yeah, I think so. Thank you all so much for listening. Yeah, if you have any questions or thoughts, hit us up at arthistorybabes@gmail.com. Check us out on the Instagram at arthistorybabespodcast. Our YouTube, we're on there. arthistorybabes.com. All the things you can find us. It's great. It's a great time.
It is. Go check it out. You're missing out if you haven't checked it out.
Yeah.
Don't miss out.
Don't miss out. You don't want to miss out. That would be a shame. Mm-mm. And we'll see y'all in the esoteric cosmos.
I love you. Bye. We are history,
babes. Oh, you sleepy?
Yes, a little bit.
I took a nap from like 3 to 5:30, so I'm going to be up all night.
Man, yeah, you are.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.